this morning's meeting for a special meeting for Wednesday, May 2nd. So now that we're convened again, it's time for Carolyn to get in the hot seat, and we'll ask questions of Carolyn to
come on down.
General counsel. So what we're doing is we're going around and going around Robin, asked a set of 12 questions, and we've allowed an hour. So that equals about 4 minutes or so for response, so, you know, there should be plenty of time. And I'll go ahead and start with the first one. Tell us about yourself and your firm, your experiencing in addressing the unique needs of court districts, and why you're interested in continuing to serve as the court's attorney.
Great. Our firm was founded by Robert Goodstein, who has been a longtime court attorney, and I joined, I guess, about 12, 14 years ago. Prior to that time, I had done some court work for him while I was an attorney at Ogle and Gates, and then William Kastner and Gibbs. And so he'd been saying, come on over, jump ship, and join. And so finally I did in about 2008. And Bob put together what he called his merry band of nonconformists, because each were particularly had particular strengths, and it had all been in large law firms. But his model was, we can do what the large law firms do at a much greater rate and savings to our client, and so that's what we did. So it came together. We have Ralph Close, who's been Bob's associate and worker with him for the longest time. And we have Cheryl Carlson, who also serves as a labor L&I ALJ. And we have Richard Sanders, retired Supreme Court Justice. And of course, we have Seth, who interned with the law firm. It was the strangest thing. He's going to law school in South Florida. But spring break, he would come up here and work as an intern at the law firm. And then sadly, Bob passed away. We moved to our new location in between Christmas and New Year's, and Bob died on February 8th. Seth had not yet graduated, and so somebody had to step up and keep the firm going, so that's when I took over the firm. So we are a women-owned business. I know that's of interest to folks. So we have come together, we all bring our strengths, and we have extensive court experience. That is our major focus, as you know. We don't diversify into other special purpose districts. We are in and all about courts. And we've had the good fortune to represent a number of courts, the Port of Port Townsend, who you may have heard of, the Court of Kalamazoo-Washougal, Port of Tacoma. Formerly represented Port of Olympia and Port of Kingston. And then also, most recently, the Northwest Seaport Alliance was formed. And as you know, that is a coming together of the marine cargo operations of both the Port of Seattle, now called North Harbor, and Port of Tacoma, now called South Harbor. And we're very fortunate to be general counsel to that entity as well.
So you're the general counsel to the Seaport Alliance?
Correct.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I was surprised when I heard that. I asked you that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting.
So we believe that our exposure, and I don't know if you want me to keep going, but we believe that our exposure, having been representing courts for 18 years, I think we say a combined year of like 70 altogether, shows that we have run into almost every situation that courts can run into. Our clients don't have to reinvent the wheel or have any kind of on-the-job training. We keep what we call a court attorney opinion notebook, because political signs and all these different, you know, governance issues tend to come up again and again, and so we have our body of research that we can update and rely on.
And I didn't get it written down quickly enough. After you, there was, and before Ralph, who else was the attorney?
There's myself, and then there's Ralph Close, mm-hmm. Cheryl Carlson, who was 16 years as in the Tacoma City Attorney's Office, and then 4 years in the Puyallup City Attorney for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then Richard Sanders, retired Supreme Court Justice. Is that, you're looking for doing something?
You were talking about when Bob died, he had a partner or something?
That was Ralph Quarles.
That was Ralph.
Yeah, and Ralph does lots of real estate transactional work, risk management, business issues, bonding, complex land transactions.
Okay.
Can I tell us, what do you believe are the most important issues facing a port attorney generally and the Port of Port Townsend specifically? Got an edge up on this one.
Yeah, I do. So before I represented, of course, I represented cities. At 15 years as a municipal attorney in Centralia, Kent, Federal Way. First 4 years of Federal Way's existence. And I really, when I talk to people about ports, I compare them as like small cities. They've got an HR department, they've got a real estate department, they've got, you know, external issues, they've got banking, finance, etc. So I think that the translation comes through across. I think ports in Washington right now are kind of in a squeeze play between their mission is very focused, and they're unique in that they are a special purpose district that is designed to foster economic development. Not everyone sees that distinction so finely, and people tend to, there are frequent attempts by communities to blur the lines between the port as an economic development entity and general purpose government, where there's a lot of softer type of powers and uses and authorized abilities. And that can sometimes dilute the economic mission of a port and that focus. And in the quest for economic development, there also can be a rub between some that perceive a conflict between economic development and environmental issues. And so a port needs to be very attuned to that and be constantly demonstrating how what it's doing can be both good for jobs and good for the environment. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot in clean truck issues that we're dealing with in different jurisdictions and waterfront development type issues, you know, satisfying all aspects of the community on that. Specific to Port of Port Townsend, of course, you have challenges, and I'll go through those. But before I do that, I want to say that one thing, you know, I have the luxury of coming at it from like 30,000 view as well. You guys who are in it every day, it's amazing, and I think it is truly a unique blessing that you have a community that is so engaged with you and that is so interested about what you're, you know, the path you're on and how you're doing. When I tell folks about, there were folks in the room offering up dollars to help the port with a project, I mean, they were blown away. It's, when you're in the trenches, sometimes just the pure support that it is not always recognized, I assure you that's just a very unique and wonderful thing, and that's pretty unique to Port Townsend. So your challenges are obviously begin with the dollar sign and your financial issues, and I know that Greg and Sam have been working on leasing issues and other ways to bring financial discipline to the port, including working on eliminating, even getting toward a sign that there's going to be a bad debt. Your derelict vessel situation has been a step also that falls under that, where you no longer want to be the recipient of everybody's boat that doesn't work, because we know the cost associated with that in a big way. The jetty project, as we all know, that bids out, and everyone's waiting with anticipation. And then also the Northwest Marine Foundation and the leasing issues at Port Hudson.
Not issue.
Not anymore.
Yes, it turns out.
From my online reading of the Townsend Leader, yes, I see that has withdrawn. I don't know if that's a permanent situation or, but I see that it was withdrawn. And all of those So all of those things are kind of leading the port to kind of a new era about physical discipline, and then also how do we continue to foster that sense of trust between the port and the community that it serves. So.
So the port's attorney is hired by and reports to the commission, but is expected to work successfully with the executive director and her directors and department managers. How would you best serve these relationships and interests?
Yes, it is a multifaceted boss, if you will, between the commission and the executive director and staff. I think the best way to serve those roles is to understand the roles that each have, policymakers, and then the role of execution on behalf of the executive director and staff. In some ways, maintaining that role is the loneliest part of the job of being the attorney, although I can imagine as a one-member board of a three-board commission, that's also a lonely place because you can't talk to each other about anything. So it's a matter of making sure that you walk a fair and balanced recognition of each role that those two entities have. I think serving with the commissioners, because you are a three-member board, there's ways to help communicate between the commissioners, not action obviously, but communication. And then with the executive director, obviously that's the executing part. And it doesn't directly answer your question, but I believe that attending your commission meetings is a really good way to understand the flavor of the community and also how the port commissioners, you get a feel of the temperature of the port commissioners and how they interact with the community. And in some ways, I think one way to balance the role that is equally due in the participation between the attorney and executive is to set up maybe a structured process where the port attorney would be here like one day a month and be here working here, and we would just work on items as they come up, and if there wasn't anything that we're not working on that didn't have to do with you, because we're very portable, we wouldn't charge to you. But it's just kind of way like the old Peanuts commercial the doctor is in and the attorney is in, and I know that Sam has set up a very structured management type of situation, so attending those management team meetings can help give insight to how that executive function is being carried out. And then certainly any of the assignments that we've been called upon to do, the hangar, non-litigation, that is litigation, but it's on hold, the hangar C issue, the stormwater, carrying out what the executive director asked of us and staff.
Okay, question number four. Providing responsive, thorough, and clear legal advice is the key responsibility of the board's attorney. Availability and accessibility to timely communicate and respond to issues via phone, email, and occasionally in person is critically important. Tell us how you plan on being timely, responsive, and thorough in meeting the legal needs of the port. Would you anticipate being present at all regular meetings of the commission?
And I promise I didn't read the question ahead of time. I think we wrote in our written materials that we understand that justice delayed can be justice denied, and so we do understand the importance of timely service. And I believe that we have been in public records issue. When we're called upon, we do a lot of email correspondence. I have my cell phone number on my email signature block, and that is preferred as the first line of communication. Second is email, and last place is office, because that's, you know, rarely there. But we do pride ourselves on responding in a timely manner. And your other question was, do you expect to be at the commission meeting?
Yes.
Yeah.
And now tell us how you plan on being timely, responsive, thorough in your meeting, legal needs of the board, and would you anticipate being present at all regular meetings of the commission?
Yeah, and like I said, number one, yes, we do expect to be timely. We expect to respond to telephone calls no later than 24 hours. I think we've met that. I know I've worked with Sue on a lot of public records issues. We've worked with Greg and Ralph of our office has worked with Greg, worked with Eric on various issues that have come about, and I think we've met that timeline, because that is very important to us. And in today's age with electronics, distance should not make a difference at all, because we do have, you know, all the bells and whistles as far as the electronic communications. I will get back to attending the commission meetings. There's just no comparing. Reading the minutes does not give you a flavor of how the board is interacting with the community. And also, you know, the role of the attorney is to understand that there's a continuum of risk. And your advice is to give your client, you know, not to say, no, you can't do this, but to say, here's how you can do it. And here is the comparative level of risk that may be associated with what you choose to do. But ultimately, that's a business decision and an executive decision that's made by others once they're fully informed of the legal risk. So part of that formula is understanding what the risk tolerance is, not only of the executive and of the commission, but also of the community. And there's different microscopes and levels of scrutiny that different courts are under. Port of Olympia, that port is under a huge amount of scrutiny, and their mission is, I think, even more at odds than any other port sometimes with the community and the people that are least vocal in their community. And so it's an invaluable insight to understand, because our advice has to be tempered by the situation in which it's going to be exercised.
Do you think it's in a situation where there's a high degree of public interaction with the commission, that it's more important to have the attorney in the meeting?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Commissioner, because sometimes you just can't anticipate what the questions or what the issues may be at a meeting. So many times, just being at the meeting, an issue will be raised, and it may not even be the issue du jour, but it will come up and it will give us insight on, all right, here's something that we can help the court with. I know I'm kind of like viral here during the meeting sometimes on my email, because I'm either looking up, there's a question being answered or just triggered. And so we're looking up the answers so that we can be ready for you and that we can supply that information upon being asked. So that is your greatest interface as a body with the community, and so we want to help with that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So you and your firm undoubtedly report large and influential public and private clients, Seaport Alliance, Port of Tacoma. How will you ensure that the Port of Port Townsend's issues and concerns receive the attention they deserve?
Right. And you deserve to feel like you are the one and only client. And that's...
Aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I hope you feel that way. Because that is also our mission. I guess the way to just say it is that we're just so invested with the Port of Port Townsend. You know, we understand... You know, we've been here in the community. The issues are real to us. It's not a theory. It's not a abstract problem to solve. It's affecting all of you. It's affecting all the staff. All the issues and decisions that you make, and we take that really personally.
So, how long were you the port attorney? How long have you been at Port Townsend?
For Port Townsend?
Yeah.
Here. It was before Bob died, and Bob died in 2010. I think it was about a couple years before that.
2009, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 9 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and with the Port of Tacoma, at least since 2004. So that, I guess, being able to multitask and address all clients, that is not a new thing. It's something that we've done.
You're next.
Go.
Did you
not
adjourn earlier?
I was kidding.
Given the cost of senior attorney services versus those of associates and paralegals, how will you balance controlling cost of the port with ensuring we have access to the very best legal advice you have to offer?
Right. Well, a couple ways. I know that sometimes it's touted that, well, we have legal assistants do that. And believe me, I've worked in Bowen Gates with 500 plus attorneys, right? And I guess I've just seen from the inside that there's a role. First of all, we don't charge for paralegals or assistants or anything like that. And I've also seen that where it's been sold as a cost saving, it's actually just an additional cost because the attorney is still going to be doing, you know, a lot of the work. And so you're really just getting an add-on with that in our experience. But it also stems from the fact that, the rates I think that we've proposed are very below market for you guys. And I think it's been since 2006 that I've even raised regular rates. I just can't seem to get past that $300. I just can't do it. Maybe it's my background and upbringing. And the rates that we've quoted and offered here are much lower than that, of course. But the way you get the very best service is that I've described it as I'm the air traffic control tower. and the attorneys are my little planes. Mm-hmm. And I know which pilot, speaking of who I'm directing the question to, but I know which attorney has the skill sets and also the capacity at any one time to give you the best answer at the most efficient rate and time. And so that's why I have suggested the role where the lead attorney is on point and then is able to distribute the work accordingly. I think you're well served by that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Small, lean, and mean.
Nimble.
How do you keep your port clients informed of new legislation and developments in relevant case law?
I know you guys are very big on WPPA, and as there are issues such as public records issues, you know, we'll email out such things. Have you seen this case? So it's by email communications, by just updating and applying the law. We do have in our materials, and it's things we've offered to other courts that are available to do, like twice yearly training issues. And so that's another mechanism, and those are complimentary, so that's another way additional information can get pushed out. And then the opportunity is also, we don't do a lot of it. I know you have your, you know, staff reporting. We don't do a lot of it in that session because it may apply to an issue that's more attuned to an exec session or a confidential memorandum. But yeah, that would be the way.
I guess you were talking about having training sessions a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. I don't think I remember hearing any about those. That would be regarding new developments in records or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think we did the new. Pretty sure we did the new commissioner training here mm-hmm. a couple years ago, mm-hmm. And then we do have our public records dog and pony show that we have, and then we've done at WPPA, and those are all available.
Have you experienced a situation in which either an elected official or staff member of a public agency disagreed with your legal advice? How did you navigate, negotiate this situation?
I don't think it's our place to negotiate, because ultimately the decision rests with the body and with the client. As I said before, our role is to say, here's the range of issues, and here's the safe harbor on an action that you propose. Again, all these analogies to water and pilots, but here's the safe harbor. And if you choose to do this, here's the risk associated with that. So our job is to make sure it's a knowing and informed decision. And sure, there's times when my advice hasn't been followed, and I can think of maybe strategy decisions on litigation, and there's where there is a consensus of opinion, and that's not a problem. Our job is to carry out the direction and the ultimate decision of the commission or executive. Speaking more.
So in municipal law, managing and reducing risk can at times conflict with taking decisive action or moving an issue forward to a definitive conclusion. Can you tell us about a situation or a project where you provided legal counsel that successfully balanced these competing considerations?
Let's see, and anything I talk about, it would be matters of public record.
Yeah, okay.
So obviously, I know you already know that, but we're not going to be disclosing any conferences. One that I can think of, well, there's a couple actually. Well, I don't want to do that one, that's too close to home. I can think of a situation, a recent situation up at the Port of Tacoma, where we have a recalcitrant property owner who had an easement, and the easement was revoked, so essentially his property is landlocked. And so the charge was move forward and litigate on that. And so it was a matter of balancing, all right, are we going to litigate and what's going to happen in the meantime, or are we going to look at a global solution? And so the solution that's being pursued now is that we have actually found a buyer for that property and have given the time to have that business solution work. There's another situation that's also involving active litigation, a federal district court case, where you could move forward with the litigation full steam ahead, but at the same time we were encouraging, this is a situation that should never go to court. It's costing both parties a lot more dollars than the issue is worth. And plus there's the issue of existing client relationship. And so again, that was one where we've encouraged, do a business solution, get it to a dollar amount, or instead of looking at dollars, look at lease extensions or getting your dollar back by preserving the relationship and extending the relationship. So those kind of things. You always have to, the lawyer's role is not to just go forth and litigate, although it's a comfort for our clients to know that we can and we do aggressively litigate when it calls for, but that the other times when the making a business decision is better for our clients. And so it's good to know that we know when to put the brakes on and when to put the gas pedal. And the people that we deal with reciprocally on the other side know that we can step on the gas and that we do. So
right.
That helps motivate. So.
Thank you.
In your experience, what are the most important attributes of a successful negotiation? Can you give us a recent example of an important issue or significant project you have successfully negotiated?
The best tools of negotiating is to listen first, and to understand, first to have a clear understanding of what your client's ultimate objectives are, and to understand as you listen where you can find commonality between your client's interest and the other side's interest, and work forward to a situation where it's of mutual benefit to both. I think the example that I just talked about with the road situation, the federal court situation is also one. Too bad that wouldn't work for the Landry case. there were no concentric circles of understanding reached there. And
shoreline issues, growth, and the future use of port properties and assets can be controversial in Jefferson County, mm-hmm. and Port Townsend in particular. Two parts of the question. What background do you have in these issues, and how would you apply your experience to the port's issues? And second is regarding land and shoreline use issues. Can you tell us about a particularly difficult issue that you managed to a successful outcome?
Sure. Yeah, you can't be a port without shoreline issues. There's a number of them, and when I first joined the dark side, went into public practice after the municipal, my 16 years of municipal practice. It was right when the Growth Management Act, GMA, was coming out, and so I immediately leapt toward it because in doing so, it was a brand new law. No one would know more about it than you do. No one would have a jump on you because it was all new developing law. And a lot of it, as that GMA got developed, so did the Shoreline Management Act kind of in concert with it as well. We have attempted to, I think the best way to work with shoreline issues is proactively before you even have a project. And by that I mean we were very successful at the Port of Tacoma in working and obtaining a shoreline designation that's called the Port Maritime Industry Designation. And so that's it's S10, S8, and S7 in the city of Tacoma. Because what that says is it's already embedded in code ahead of time, comprehensively, that these kind of uses are going to be used in this area. And it provides it gives a greater flexibility because it's already set out in law that these are things that are permitted uses. It promotes predictability and certainty in the planning situation. We replicated to some degree of that at the Port of Olympia. We have, there was a particular issue probably about 4, 5, 6 years ago where in Tacoma, I don't know if you're familiar with it, the way it works is that here's Tacoma, and the port there is very blessed by being across the waterway, and then there's fingers of the port, and these are all little inlets or are waterways. And so all around here is the city, and it's great because there is that geographical buffer between the port and maritime industrial uses and the rest of the city. About 6 years ago, there was an attempt to breach this natural waterway, if you will. There was an attempt to put in condos right on the entry, so across the first waterway. And our port executive director at the time saw that as a, you know, the beginning of a gentrification issue here. So a condo project was proposed, and we used Shoreline Management Act, we used comprehensive plan to help the city understand that that would not be a good idea. And it was not a bad outcome in the end. Because in the end, it ended with a public-private partnership where the city understood that they had somewhat encouraged this developer to be there where he shouldn't be there anyway. And so they joined with that entity, Tacoma Urban Water, which is a think tank directed on water quality issues, bought that property instead, perfect for and very compatible with what we do. And then that project was moved over to the Sarco site that's cleaned up. And is now that wonderful, beautiful Ruston area that's full of restaurants and everything. So everybody got placed in the right situation. And the neat thing about that was, even though I had battled that condo project all the way through, it was a multi-year project, and it was funded by both the port and also some of the oil refineries, terminals that were nearby. At the end of that, one of the first calls I got was from the owner of the project I was opposing, saying, hey, can you work with us on these issues? So we thought that was a pretty good, compliment.
Okay.
But although that was just one concept, I really would refer you to our written materials. We just cut our teeth on shoreline issues, land use, zoning issues, pollution control hearings board. We have a lot of experience in that.
Port public disclosure requests under RCW 42.56 have increased substantially in recent years and occupy a considerable amount of staff time. The port supports open government and is committed to full disclosure of all non-exempt public records. What is your approach to and the level of involvement in working with agency staff to identify, review, and timely provide public records to interested citizens?
Right, and that is, I think as there is increasing suspicion and distrust between government and citizens, and I'm talking on a global basis here, you see the number of records requests really go up. And the way you can help build that trust again, we are doing the people's business. We have absolutely nothing to hide. We have everything to be proud about. And so there's no reason not to strictly follow the public records. Public records does have a series of exemptions. And those exemptions, of course, are applied very sparingly. I work hand in hand with the Port of Tacoma's and our other ports' public records officer. Together, we have built up a system. It's a thankless job being a public records officer, because you are at the beck and call. There are very tight timelines, and there's very strict compliance issues that you need to deal with. At the same time, you're also charged with knowing where these records might be. So we have constructed systems where public records response, as well as public records management and retention issues, are addressed together, because you have to know where the records are, number one, in order to locate them. And number two, if the retention schedule says you can get rid of it after 8 years, 10 years, whatever, then you can get rid of it and you have less places that you have to search. It's not that you're hiding anything, it's just that it's a question of finite resources, right? I work extensively, probably I would say about 30% of my time with Port of Tacoma is public records. And organizing a way. It's a bit larger in scale, obviously, so it makes it even harder for that one person to know what everything is going on. So there's a system where she may be the public records, but every department has a public records coordinator. So again, it's the wheel and spoke issue. So she's able to call upon her coordinators to say, what do you know about this? And then to follow up on where that lead may take you. Because the requirement is, of course, that you have to follow every lead and you have to be of the utmost assistance in finding records. But there are times when, there's lawful exemptions. We have standardized a third-party notification, which is a process under the law that says if you get a public record and it affects a third party, and a lot of times it may be a private third party, then you can give notice to that person and let them have some skin in the game as far as if they want to weigh in on their own to determine whether that record should be withheld on a basis that they can claim. Case in point, Port of Olympia, during the Weyerhaeuser move with the log yard, tons of public records requests on the log yard. We brought in, we notified Weyerhaeuser, brought them in so they could exert exemptions such as trade secrets, etc. which a court, and it makes sense on a number of bases. Number one, a court is not going to be sympathetic to the court saying this is a trade secret or warehouse, but they would be sympathetic to a private entity. And plus, it's only proper that the private entity that wants that protection to be spending their dollars, their private dollars, rather than public dollars being spent on their behalf. And they're the most knowledgeable about why, and should be most passionate about why it should or should not be refused. That issue gets repeated a lot on some of our major terminal agreements at Puerto Seon, Puerto Tacoma. We will sometimes get requests for those, and a lot of times how that formula is calculated, what they're doing, etc., the client may have an interest in protecting the tenant. And so we use that, and we have a regular handout that we give to these folks so that they know that it's not just us folks. It's what the entire state needs, has to deal with. Plus, I think I've litigated maybe 16 different public records requests at least, majority of them with Mr. West, Arthur West, who's a public records
troll.
Thank you. Your words. To the point, and we represented WPPA on a couple of those, and we were successful in having him designated by Thurston County Court, what's called a vexatious litigant. And what that means is that, I know, isn't that great? Vexatious litigant. And what that means is that he, as with respect to that client, WPPA, he could no longer file any lawsuits against them unless he was represented by counsel or it was reviewed ahead of time by a judge and authorized. So, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So there's a lot of, hypothetically, there's a lot of things you could do, like, say, put everything that's in print in, you know, any document we have, just put it up on the web, have it indexed, and make it impossible for them not to be able to find it.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that, because, as you know, along with retention, it's how you organize them. And so it's how you set up your drives. If we believe that there's a controversial issue or project ahead of time, we set up a drive just specific to that. And even though many departments may touch that issue, mm-hmm. all the records go there. So if we do get a request, it's easy and it's there. And then we also have a structure where it's pre-set up, where things that are clearly public, and then there would be a subfile for attorney-client review. So it's set up ahead of time that if there's anything sensitive that you think it's in that folder, and boom, if we get a request, it's packaged, it's ready.
So anything where there might be a third-party flag would go in this kind of suspense
exactly.
review.
Yeah, and the system, and you're absolutely correct about a link satisfies, as Sue knows. Instead of providing the actual paper record, if you provide the link, that satisfies. So all our interlocal agreements, bam, all our contracts, bam, they're already on the website, and makes it easier.
But that's probably for a larger port like Tacoma or one of those. It's almost a necessity for a port like Port Townsend. It's how much effort do you put into the web service versus how much effort you do on a day-to-day basis?
I think that and I know that Sue's always open to ways to innovate and improve. I think if the discipline, in some ways, a port this size is easier to execute the discipline on, and if it's done just as a matter of course, that'll become, you know, even more easy.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so that's the end of our prepared questions. If you didn't get to say anything that you really were just dying to get out, now's the time.
Do you have any prepared questions for us?
No, I did bring cartoons. No.
We have a copy of that for each of us?
I do. And it's just because, and if you look at this section, I call it reintroducing ourselves to you, because I know that sometimes the old time worn-out shoe is not as exciting as the nice, shiny high heel. And so I thought it important, in addition to some of the general stuff, we explain our experience. I also give you a snapshot of each one of the attorneys that are members of our firm and the resources that you have to draw on. And also, we were very pleased that the Noglin Law Firm, we've done this in the past, and we've joined, you'll see our materials reflect that we have teamed up with them for this. And what that gives the court is seamless access to services of an environmental law firm as well.
I'm sorry, who was that you said?
It's called the Noglin Law Firm. Mark Noglin, he and I were associates together, as of counsel, 20 years ago at Bogle and Gates. He has his own firm on Bainbridge Island, and he's a civil engineer as well as a lawyer. So they're everywhere. So.
Dangerous combination.
What's that?
A dangerous combination.
Yeah, there you go. And he has worked with Moll Foster a lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, and recovered multi-millions of dollars in environmental recovery. What his firm does is they do the insurance recovery investigation. Before 1972, I think, was the year Mark would know. Before that date, insurance policies did not exclude pollution that, coverage. After that, they generally do. So prior to that time, if you have a property and it's contaminated, he does the forensic research back to all prior owners and then digs out the insurance coverage that may have existed at that time. And he was instrumental on our Blair waterway cleanup against Lloyd's of London. I think it was something like $27 million. And he's been used by the ports of Bellingham, et cetera. And so we work together really well. It adds another dimension, so you just have that much more of a suite of services available to you. Just in closing, we are very blessed to have had a relationship with you, and we, of course, are very interested in continuing on that journey. By way of analogy, just a little bit, I like startups and new things. When I was an attorney at the City of Federal Way, it was during the first 4 years of its incorporation, so we got to build the city from the ground up, draft the entire criminal code, ethics code, everything. Our first offices was in the bay of a fire station with the doors opening when it was hot because it was a brand new city and it was the third largest city at the time of incorporation. So that was a great interest for me to build that. Then Bogle and Gates, the firm I talked to you about, 500 lawyers in Seattle, and then they had us start a 5-person firm in Tacoma, satellite firm in Tacoma. That was a success. And then most recently with the Northwest Seaboard Alliance, the coming together of these, never been done before, had to get permission from the Federal Maritime Commission, which we did, had to negotiate how that would be structured, had to create new state law for it to happen. And that has panned out so far to be very successful. And so I see, with Sam's new reign here, I see this as another kind of remake and a rebirth, if you will, of the board. And we would very much like to be part of that journey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick follow-up to that comment. Where do you see Goodstein going? I mean, are you, actively looking for more clients? Are you happy where you're at?
We're happy with where we are. Yeah. The next step the first step would be to bring some more folks on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Open the Port Townsend branch.
There you go.
We have a building for lease. Right on the water.
Bottom water.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so now we're going to adjourn into an executive session, which I assume we're going to be part of, right?
Yep, can we, why don't we take a, just a 5 minute break and I can, something for Abigail?
Oh, that's right, Abigail, all right. So we're adjourned for 5 minute break.
Is there, are there any decisions or what's the duration?
Oh, and I need to read what we're doing, if I can find it. And here it is. Going to observe.
Are you leaving or staying for the?
I thought he was going to stay for the exec session.
The commission will now adjourn into executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.110G. Review the performance of a public employee. It's expected to last how long? Anybody know? Abigail's not here. Abigail is going to give us, I'm going to say what, 20 minutes?
I have no idea what we're doing.
Me either.
Well, this is what you wanted to have like 2 meetings ago.
Since
we can't talk to each other.
This is I have no idea this is happening today.
This is going to be starting the evaluation of Sam.
In a month.
It's a regular step in that annual review.
Exactly. It's going to be an irregular step in that.
I didn't bring that paper.
I didn't bring that either.
Why don't we take a 10 minute break?
We'll take a 10 minute break, and then we'll start at 3:30 in the executive session.
Okay.